Translation. O respectful one, a wife is so helpful that she's called the better half of a man's body because of her sharing in all auspicious activities. A man can move without anxiety and trusting all responsibilities to his wife. Purport. By the Vedic injunction, the wife is accepted as the better half of a man's body because she's supposed to be responsible for discharging half of the duties of the husband. A family man has a responsibility to perform five kinds of sacrifices called panchayagya in order to get relief from all kinds of unavoidable sinful reaction incurred in the course of his affairs. When a man becomes qualitatively like the cats and dogs, he forgets his duties in cultivating spiritual values, and thus he accepts his wife as a sense-gratificatory agency. When the wife is accepted as a sense-gratificatory agency, personal beauty is the main consideration, and as soon as there is a break in personal sense gratification, there is disruption or divorce. But when husband and wife aim at spiritual advancement by mutual cooperation, there is no consideration of personal beauty or the disruption of so-called love. In the material world, there is no question of love. Marriage is actually a duty performed in mutual cooperation as directed in the authoritative scriptures for spiritual advancement. Therefore, marriage is essential in order to avoid the life of cats and dogs, which are not meant for spiritual life, enlightenment. Om Gyanati Manasya Knanana Salakya Shakshuran Militangana Tasmai Sigurve Namaha Sri Chaitana Manavastam Stapitane Svayam rupa kadalayam dadati svapadantikam vandeham siguro siyutapadakamanam sigurun vaisnavanscha sirupam sahajatam sahana raghunatam vitam tam sajivam sarvaitam sahadutam parijana saitam krishna chitanya devam sirara krishna padam sahagana dalita sivisakam vitam scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagat Pate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaskrite Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavane Swaye Visvanu Sutade Pranamami Hari Priye Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in a description of the Grihastha Ashram, as one of the four ashrams, or one of the four stages of life aimed at making a spiritual advancement. In that respect, we are here discussing the Grihastha Ashram. And what is depicted here is in a way an ideal, something to strive for, as there is an ideal in every ashram. As there is an ideal for the brahmachari, which is a challenge to live up to, an ideal for the sannyasi, somewhere in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada speaks about the men in this age who dress up like sannyasis, right, as if it is some sort of masquerade. Because in previous ages, so many austerities were being performed, which are now not so easy. So, in the same context, we are looking at the Grihastha Ashram. And, naturally, it's easy for a sadhu to say there is no love in the material world. But at the same time, without loving dealings, it is also very difficult to go on. So if we say love doesn't truly exist in the material world, that may be true in the sense that love is aiming at Krishna, at satisfying Krishna's senses. Admendriya priti vanchitara bolikam Krishnendri priti achitare premanam. When we are somehow or other involved in satisfying our own senses, we speak about lust and not love. So in this world, every relationship is mixed with personal sense enjoyment. And that is the reason why we speak of that there is no love in the material world. Meaning that pure love is Krishnendriya, is for the pleasure of Krishna's senses. That takes serious practice in devotional service. One cannot just do that, because sense enjoyment is not something we seek out. It comes on its own accord, as suffering also comes on its own accord. So many times a day, the senses are having an enjoyable sensation, and it's hard not to like it. And it's hard then not to develop a little bit of desire to have that taste again. And it's hard to then not make a little bit of conscious effort to have that case, that experience again. And as soon as we do, we are acting in a fruitive way, and we're acting for sense gratification. So it is a trap, so to speak, that one easily walks into, even without consciously making the choice, shall I not engage in sense gratification? The senses automatically encounter all kinds of such enjoyments. So, in that way, Rupa, Rasa, Sparsha, Ganda, and Sabda, or the five sense objects. Form, taste, touch, sound, smell, all these are the five means through which sense gratification can be experienced, and that will be there. And of course, sex life, the sense of touch, is very strong. So, if there is no desire for any sense gratification, why get married? One might say, well, to have children, okay, but even there, is one having children completely out of pure love, or is one having also children because of a desire for sense enjoyment? We want to enjoy these children. See, it's not that we want to have children because we want to sincerely help some souls on their way back to the spiritual world. And we pray to Krishna, please give us some children so that we get a chance to give these souls some Krishna consciousness. I mean, that's not all there is to it. It's the senses are pushing the particular physical, mental condition we are in dictates have children. So where is selflessness in the material world? So that was my response to Srila Prabhupada's point he made in the purport, that actually there is no love in the material world. So because he said it, I felt compelled, I felt obliged, you know, to stay loyal to the purport and to highlight it. So I did that. But now I want to go to the other side, and that is that, so it's not the pure love of the material, of the spiritual world, fine. But everyone needs some, everyone needs kindness, affection, and all these kind of qualities. And when marriage is stripped from that and turned into some sort of cold contract for spiritual advancement, right, then I guarantee you that you're not going to have a happy marriage. You're going to have a serious set of problems. Because that's not the idea. Affection is required. Appreciation is required. The emotional side is an important aspect in marriage. It must be there. There must be mutual trust and appreciation. But unfortunately, not everyone marries to have a partner that fulfills that role of the better half. Some people marry someone to have a doormat because they need one to kind of mentally relieve some tension. You know what I mean? There's a lot of stress that has built up in them due to interaction with the three modes of material nature. Lust, greed, and anger are very strong. So a wife is physically weaker. That's great. That's a fantastic opportunity to exploit. In this way, she can be easily pushed into the underdog role and abused in various ways, so that the man can get rid of all his built-up frustration, which has come about due to many years of life. And that's and many men marry for that reason, actually. So I can herewith advise the ladies to be careful. It's not only out of love that people marry. Some people marry because they need to release something. Something not so nice. Now, what do you do if it's already happened? The marriage already happened, and here's the Bhagavatam verse, you know, the better half. And all we can do is kind of, you know, have a cynical sigh. And there was there's a play I sometimes described where the husband he's got one of these singlets under shirts. It's hot, it's summer. He's sitting in front of TV and he's watching football. And meanwhile, the wife, she's got a huge pile of laundry which she's ironing. There's no end to the pile. And she's just like ironing and ironing. She just comes out of the kitchen, so she's wearing a cloth on her hair, sort of tied back. Doesn't look very charming, to be honest, you know what I mean? And it's sort of like a situation, you know, he sits there with a fat belly, bulging, you know, very visible. Yeah. So it looks off like a marriage situation where romance is long gone. Right. And she speaks first. And she says, like, and I thought that he was going to deliver me. Right. And he's saying, shut up, shut up. I'm watching TV, you know. And then, you know, shut up. And he goes,
where's my coffee?
You know, so then, like, you know, she brings him the coffee, right? But with a face from, you fallen soul, right? You, here is your coffee, since you are so fallen that you cannot even live without. So she doesn't say it, but her eyes are, and the expression on her face are saying it. So he says, look, there's nothing wrong with coffee. You know what I mean? It's not diminishing my Krishna consciousness in any way. See? Black Krishna. White Radharani. And when you stir it, Gauranga. So anyway, here we are kind of looking at what, you know, one of those scenarios where you might say, what went wrong on the way to heaven? Yeah. And then when we come to this verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, it may look a little bit theoretical and somewhat remote from reality. Of course, this verse is better read before the marriage. And this verse is better understood by both before the marriage. And this verse is better thoroughly discussed before the marriage. And where things are not completely in line with what is described here and the mutual respect that is described here, then there is some work to do. Some adjustments are to be made. Take it like this. Marriage is about making adjustments. If you didn't know yet. And it's not adjustments from the other one.
Yes, 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 yes. Marriage is about adjustments. See? Maharaj said it. And now, you know, I want you to take note of it. It's time you make some adjustments.
One says to the other one, no. It's about, you say that to yourself in the mirror. It's about us. It's about us making adjustments. But it requires many adjustments. My favorite expression is that marriage, there's no question of the ideal match and of a marriage that just works. It only works if you work for it. And work for it means if you make these adjustments to kind of become that person that we're supposed to be. And isn't that exactly what we have to do in any other ashram? Isn't it exactly, I mean, you know, to be a sannyasi is the same thing. Mind, body and words surrender to Krishna. My mind would rather not, you know, sometimes. There are moments when the mind doesn't really want to surrender. I mean, do I have to? You know, can't I have a break sometimes? No, it is in all time, place and circumstance. Sarva Avasta, it says for the brahmacharis, in all time, place and circumstance, says the sage Yajnavalkya. Sarva Avasta, in every condition of life, always. Yeah, yes, always. So that means adjustment, personal adjustment. So these ashrams are designed in such a way that we are meant to make personal adjustments to fit them. That's the idea of the Varna Ashram culture. We take shelter of a mold and try to adjust ourselves accordingly. So that is what we're talking about here. And the adjustment is from both sides. It's not automatic. There's enough austerity in every ashram, including the Grihastha ashram. And, you know, one saintly personality asked a question that I remembered, and that question was, why is it that a baby who is born out of love When it comes out of the womb, why is it that the baby is not singing? What if babies would sing instead of cry? Have you ever thought of that? Imagine. They would only sing. Yeah? I mean, wouldn't that like fit the scenario much better? There's love. Love is the main thing, you know, born out of love between the parents, and then there it is, the child, and it just sings, you know, beautiful. And then there's this like sound which I wouldn't describe as beautiful. I don't know exactly how to describe it. A polite way is intense. I guess. It's kind of intense. And so just see, right? I mean, that takes adjustment. Right? As soon as that sound begins, the natural reaction is like, stress. Take a deep breath, you know, calm your mind. Act as if it's normal. Yes, darling. Like this. Adjustment is the principle. And the problem is when there is rigidity. And rigidity is a disease. And it exists deeply in this Hare Krishna movement. Deeply. And it is a very serious disease. And in the Indian culture. And a lot has been going on behind the Vedas. A wall of Veda, and behind it, so much mistreatment due to the stubbornness of a conditioned soul who doesn't want to change. Whereas the very first principle of spiritual life is, I'm going to change. And if you step in the door of this temple, you have signed a contract where you have signed, I am going to change. And if you're not willing, who are you fooling? Nobody but yourself. But in the course of it, you may bring help to your family as well. Because since the wife is the better half, and by the way, the children are expansions, right? You can mess up the lives of the whole family as well, of the wife and the kids. And your own. Well done. So, you know, considering all this, this lecture is sort of based on this verse. It is a lecture where we are compelled towards some introspection. Where we are really meant to say, well, am I up to the wool mark? You know, so to speak. And if not, what do I have to adjust? And anyone who is not ready to get introspective has a problem. There's a problem on both sides. Change must be there. Bhagavatam is speaking about the change of heart. That is hard work. That is what we're doing. Our whole process is a process where we are gradually changing our ways. It starts from day one, and it starts in a gross way with some principles, and that's very measurable. I mean, if someone's following the four regulated principles or not, you can easily measure it. That you can see immediately. But the more subtle things, character, I am very humble. Sure. Yeah. I'm very honest also. Right. You got it. You got it bad. Nobody is humble. That's the problem. That's why we're in the material world. Nobody is honest. That's why we took birth in the age of Kali. Yeah? It's like, honesty. Come on. We're not even honest with ourselves. That's where it begins. Everyone is just... In the age of Kali, it is said that people are just living for show, for the impression, that the so-called impression that others have of them, as if, you know, they fall for it. The truth is, so there's a lot of masquerade, a lot of facade, a lot of showing off, right? And, you know, I mean, you can't. You know, it's like one thing in marriage, which is mortal sin, is when one of the partners, right, publicly diminish the prestige of the partner. Now, this is like mortal sin, and this is fuel for major war. I mean, this could lead to a one-week fight or to an ongoing fight. But the truth is that we're both living with a facade. Both partners live with a facade and hold it up to the world and, you know, and sort of hide the skeletons in the closet. Yes, because in marriage you can't hide it. The truth, you know, for a while, right, in the engagement period, you can hold your belly. Right? You know, during the engagement period, you know, you can be always sweet and smiling and never like fried and in anxiety and all that. In the engagement period, all this is possible. During the marriage period, the cat is going to come out of the bag, you know. The truth is going to come out in all its ugliness, and it will be known, right? It will not remain hidden. That's all about marriage. So then, but if the willingness is there to be a devotee, if the willingness is there to change, if the willingness is there to make spiritual advancement, then this formula that is being described here now can be applied, and then the Grihastha Ashram can be very favorable. Very favorable. And it is the main ashram. It is the foremost ashram for most people. It is therefore the principal ashram that that this Vaishnava movement is manifesting in. I mean, brahmachari, it's against the odds. Right? It's like, in a way, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, some elderly lady may shake her head and say, "Young man, what are you doing with your youth?" Nothing. Nothing on the material plane. All for spiritual life. But what are you sacrificing? You don't want to be in the picture. You can walk past and wave and everything. Yeah. Anyhow, so in this way, the Grihastha Ashram is a very important element in this movement. And it's the Grihasthas that must be spiritually strong. From other ashrams, it's naturally expected. From the sannyasis and the brahmacharis, it's naturally expected that there's spiritual strength, and that has an influence in this movement. But if the Grihastha ashram is weak, then we're having a major problem. So we need that dedication to spiritual life and not to sense gratification. That, as I said before, sense enjoyment comes in. That's okay. We are not against sense enjoyment, but legitimate sense enjoyment. Sex life is not forbidden, but it is illicit sex life that is condemned. Not kamusmi bharatarsava. Not sexual activity according to religious principle. Now, that's not completely easy, What if you have 30 rasgullas on a plate and you can have only one? How is that? After you've taken one rasgulla, you want another rasgulla. That's the nature of rasgullas. What can be done? I don't know if you have experience with rasgullas, but that's how they are. It's hard to have only one rasgulla. In the same way, it is also not so easy to engage in sexual activity only once a month. No, that's not so easy. There are 30 days, 30 rasgullas, only one. So, in this way, we can appreciate that spiritual life is therefore grounded in all ashrams on Vairagya. Vairagya vijanija bhakti yoga says Sarvam Bhattaracharya in a prayer to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is based on Vairagya for all. That's not like that now we have to get rigid about renunciation, Vairagya, but rather that we must be whatever we do, it must be authorized. That is ashram life. Ashram life means to act according to prescribed duty, not just whimsical, not just as it comes, not just as one feels, but according to prescribed duty. And that is the Bhagavatam. So it's not so easy. Not so easy. That's the serious part of Vedic culture, and it sounds a little dry. So. Prescribed duty. Can we just, sometimes just be as we are? No, the art is to be as we, to find within the scope of Vedic culture and of Varnashram culture ample of space for personal expression. Therefore, it's important that we have some culture in our movement. Therefore, it's nice that we have Bharatanatyam. Although, personally, it's a kind of music that's not my favorite, to be honest. The dancing part's okay, but the music, oh my God. It gets on my nerves as soon as it starts. But it's good. I can develop some tolerance there. There's no loss in that. But I'm for it. I'm for it. Although, culturally, it doesn't fully connect with me. I must say, from a musical side. But it offers a room for expression, and that is very much needed. So there was once upon a time, the Hare Krishna movement, when it was very young, there were also four ashrams. But within those four ashrams, there was very little understanding about the culture of the ashrams. It basically... are you married? No. Do you have a girlfriend? No. Okay, you're a brahmachari. What that meant, nobody knew, but you're wearing saffron, and if we catch you with the ladies too much, we're going to marry you off, kind of thing. Nothing else. The Grihastha ashram, it's like you're married now, but it's not a mundane marriage, it's a spiritual marriage. Oh, I see. Okay. But how to do that? So there is a lot of culture, and when we fill in the ashrams with more culture, that will help. One Grihastha was asking Srila Prabhupada, what is the duty in the Grihastha ashram? And Srila Prabhupada said that before you take your meals, you should call out three times into the street, is anybody hungry? Is anybody hungry? Is anybody hungry? Yeah, there are different ways to do it, you know. There's the old Mahabharata trick. You get one of the children a conch shell, and as you're saying it, is anybody hungry? They blow the conch shell, you know. The elephant Aswatthama is dead, remember? No one heard the word elephant. So you could try that trick at the same time. But anyway, it's a challenge to really do that. So that Grihastha was also a little bit shocked when asking Srila Prabhupada. And then I said, is there anything else? And Prabhupada said, no, just cook, no. Just call out, is anybody hungry? Is anybody hungry? Is anybody hungry? So it's quite clear that one is meant to have guests. I mean, one is meant to invite people for prasadam. Are we doing that? Never thought of it. You know, when was the last time? Don't remember. See, so that culture of having an open house is very important because it cultivates the charitable mood, the mood of a spirit of generosity, a spirit of sharing. Instead, whereas, you know, otherwise a griha could easily become a warehouse where one is storing like in more and more goodies, because each ashram has its codes, kind of. And I say like the brahmachari ashram is like, you know, I always suggest to the brahmacharis that sometimes they clean their room, you know, just as a recommendation. And when they do so, that they put everything out of the room, whatever's in there, put it all outside in the corridor, clean the room, and then before you put it back in, ask three times, do I really need this? Do I really need this? If you can't convincingly answer the question, don't put it back in the room. That's what I would recommend to the brahmacharis. The grihastha approach is a little different. The grihastha approach is like, well, you know, if it's not forbidden, then why not have it? You know. That's a different approach, right? If the label's all right, then anything, you know, if it's not against our principles, well, let's keep it. Let's keep this thing. It could come in handy. You know, I think we have one of these things somewhere. I've seen it. Where is the thing? Right? Yeah, for sannyasis in this age, there's an automatic mechanism called the lady on the airport that keeps our lives simple, you know. Overweight on the bag, okay. So all the time, it has to go out. Anyway, my principle is, in this discussion today, is that yes, we are meant to change, and we want to go back to the spiritual world, and that's the goal of life. The goal of life is not to get married, or to avoid marriage. Right? The goal of life is to go back to Godhead. And so the Grihastha Ashram is ultimately meant for devotional service. What service are we doing? That is the question. Right? And yes, Vanchakalpa Tarubhya, you know, that verse, right, about the wish fulfilling desire trees and offering obeisances and all that begins at home. You know, the Vaishnava relationships begin at home. And when that is there at home, it helps a lot. Right? That's not only with the other devotees in the temple. And at home, it's just shit. Vaishnav etiquette, Vaishnav exchange begins at home, and only then from there. charitable. He gave everything. Yes. Yes. So to be charitable is in many ways encouraged in the Vedic literature, and that is the Grihastha ashram. I mean the Grihastha ashram. Mukha Bahura Pada Ja is going from the head, the arms, the waist, and the legs. And that replies to the four varnas, the Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. They are the head, the arms, the waist, and the legs, and also to the four ashrams. So the sannyas ashram is meant to be the head and meant to give the vision. The Vanaprastha ashram is the arms. And when I spoke that in every ashram there is a certain amount of sacrifice, a certain amount of renunciation, a certain amount of adjustment required, the Vanaprastha ashram is completely dedicated to that. I mean, it's a big thing, actually. After so many years of marriage, when you suddenly, are sort of winding it up, it's emotionally painful. And there's a lot to digest, and it requires a lot of focus. Therefore, the focus in the Vanaprastha ashram is especially cultivating spiritual strength. The Grihastha ashram is the waist in this body. And therefore, because the Grihastha ashram is meant to produce, it is the ashram where one is involved with the material energy, earning money, earning produce, and one must share that for spiritual purposes. That is a duty emphasized. And then the brahmacharis are the legs. So the brahmacharis must run around, right, for the sake of preaching. Slightly louder.
There's a transition from Grihastha ashram to Vanaprastha ashram. Like, there are a lot of adjustments that one needs to do. But what I can see is, like, when a Grihastha has been lived in a particular way, he has developed all these habits, and bad habits as well, whereas he doesn't have a taste to read, he doesn't have a taste for devotional service. So when he goes to Vanaprastha ashram, he's already so old that it's very difficult to unwind things.
Yeah.
So how to do that?
Yeah, just there are different Grihasthas mentioned. Right. There's like one Grihastha who is a professional. Another one is an accumulator. And then there are Grihasthas who live very austere. So, in different stages of life, you may wind up in different roles. When you have a young family and you have a big bond on your house and so on, you may have to accumulate for a while and develop your professional skills. But once things get a bit more settled, then you can simplify life. That is the thing. So, Vanaprastha is a particular stage. It's hard to say exactly where Vanaprastha begins and where Grihastha life ends. There is some sort of sandhya, a joint between the two, and with it's not like it cannot be a day and night change. You know, yesterday I was like, you have these people, they come, you know, and they say, I want to become a sadhu, I want to give my whole, I want to take sannyas. They come, they want to take it. And then if you ask a little more, then they've had a big fight with their wife. Right? and they come to us and they want to take sannyas. In India, it's quite common. Especially, yes. Yeah. it happens a lot that a man after a fight wants to take sannyas. That's just some foolish sentiment. These kind of things, like the ashrams, are very serious things that require serious preparation, each one of them. That's why I said in the lecture, it's better to read this verse before the marriage, so that we prepare for the marriage and that everything is like already in place before. Also, that as we are married, marriage is sometimes compared to a deep, dark well. Right? Well, you described some elements of why, because we develop some bad habits. Right? I mean, we neglect spiritual life and get so busy with material things and then get into a habit. In that way, we become covered by ignorance. That's why it's a deep, dark well. Now, there are different ways you can go into the well, you know. I mean, it's like you can go and just run to the well and just like dive in head down, you know, like go straight to the bottom. But there are also usually steps in the well for maintenance, you know. So you don't have to, you can also go down with those. So one can get married, right? But you don't have to get like totally caught up into unlimited entanglement and building up endless bad habits and neglecting all positive spiritual habits. Why not from the start or as early as possible put some serious good spiritual habits in place? That's advisable. And those marriages are the marriages that work better for spiritual life, obviously. So that's the way we approach it. Srila Prabhupada said that the devotees who in this movement should not desire to have the same standard of life as people in the world. Do we really need that expensive Mercedes? Do we really need it? We do. Okay, all right, okay, I understand. Do we really need everything? You know. So although I said it for the brahmacharis, even grihasthas in this movement can sort of keep life a bit simple. So that there's more time and energy for spiritual life. You keep your life simple, you have more time and energy for spiritual life. Then you can actually read. If you need less money, you might even be able to read. Bhagavatam. And then you read this verse and think, geez, I mean, gosh, my marriage doesn't look like that. My wife, the better half, you know, look, wait a minute, you know what I mean? Or she goes, yes, it says here, I'm the better half, you know what I mean? That's also a scenario. So it takes sacrifice from the earlier stages on. Now, not later. Later I'll take Vamaprastha. No. One time I came to Radhadesh, actually after many years in India, I came to Radhadesh and there had been a big marriage the day before. And I arrived on the day of the marriage, and the next morning I gave Bhagavatam class, and there was a verse. It was all about renunciation and taking sannyas, you know, and everything. It was just so. Then I got inspired because of the marriage the day before, and I said that one should start thinking about sannyas on the day of the marriage. That was not appreciated by all. In fact, later I heard they had an emergency meeting about it. To discuss if I should be allowed to give further classes. But let me say it again today. and then let me explain it this time. Not in a fanatic spirit, but not in a spirit of, but if you don't sort of keep in mind that one day I will also take that step, right? From the very beginning, then you'll never do it. And your hair will grow white and you'll just ignore it. And Vanaprastha looks like something you just can't relate to it. Don't know what to do with this. Just don't know what to do with it. Can't relate. And you grow old, hand in hand, bone in bone, skin, saggy skin, saggy skin. And, yeah, will you be able to remember Krishna at the end of life? That's the question. So all this is not about one ashram chastising the other ashram. This is about, like, are we going to go back to Godhead this lifetime? So we better start making changes now. More? Or shall I stop? Looks like I should stop. Okay, then I'll stop. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Kantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Stretch for 1 second, the knees, then I'll do it. It's the knees now, it's not the back.